We're very fortunate to have for our keynote speaker one of the leading voices in German politics on issues relating to Turkey-EU relations and Germany's large Turkish community. The Honorable Michelle Müntefering is a member of the German Parliament, the Bundestag. She chairs the German-Turkish Parliamentary Cooperation Group and is a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Ms. Müntefering is in her second term in the Bundestag, representing a district in the coal mining and industrial region of the Ruhr Valley. She's active on education policy and supporting local government, having served nearly a decade on the city council in her hometown of Erne. Outside her parliamentary duties, she's a vice president of the German-Turkish Society and a member of the Atlantic Bridge, two nonprofits dedicated to building and enriching Germany's ties with Turkey and the U.S. respectively. Ms. Müntefering will speak to us this afternoon about the state of Turkey-German relations and the way forward. She will have a set of prepared remarks, after which she will take Q&A questions from you in the audience. And as indicated in the morning, we have mics, mic stands, and do line up on those mics as she approaches the end of her remarks. She speaks very good English, but she might rely on a bit of interpretation in the Q&A segment. And we have with us an interpreter, Ms. Brigitte Richman, who will come to the podium after her remarks are finished, help us with the Q&A. Please join me in welcoming to the podium the Honorable Michelle Müntefering.
Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, friends of the Middle East Institute and the Friedrich Ebert Foundation, first of all, I would like to thank you for that invitation. It's a special honor to give the keynote remarks at this special conference. But the task you have set me to say something about the current German-Turkish relations in my remarks is certainly not an easy one. I say this because at present this relationship is marked by conflicts, a loss of confidence, and insecurity. But with a diplomatic sense of humor, it is tempting to fall back on a Turkish proverb that says, there is nothing so bad that you can't make something of it. So I will try that. We have already heard some notable contributions today about developments and the dynamics of Turkish economy. The main conclusion that we can draw from this is just how significant economic success is for the president's continuous grip on power. In Germany, Turkey is a daily preoccupation for press and public alike. It has become a long-running issue. Unfortunately, it is accompanied by a kind of a foghorn diplomacy on both sides. And yet, there are many important issues to resolve, which have already been touched on today. Where do we go from here in terms of Germany's relationship with Turkey and the EU accession process if the country with which we feel such a bond is increasingly turning away from Europe? What can Germany do to support all the groups and individuals in Turkey who do not want to see the bridges to Europe broken down? What opportunities do we have to exert influence against human rights violations and arbitrary arrests? What happens if Turkey fully withdraws from the alliances that have helped to build Europe's security and maintain the balance of power for decades? How can Turkey be involved as a reliable partner, and what are the implications for the transatlantic relationship? And how can we work together in the future on fighting terrorism and the global migration issue? As you see, these are just a few complex, weighty, and interconnected questions facing us, and I look forward to discuss our issues we have in common further on today. They also make it clear that German-Turkish relations cannot be viewed solely in a bilateral context. On the contrary, they have a triad made up of foreign, European, and German domestic policy. As the chair of the German-Turkish Parliamentary Friendship Group, I would like to focus in my keynote on the special bonds connecting Germany and Turkey and talk about what is perhaps our most important interest, living peacefully with all communities together in Germany. And I will talk, too, about our vital interest in a Turkey which does not turn away from Europe but maintains its close connection to us. As early as the 19th century, there was already an awareness among the European elites that European policy could not be made without considering Turkey. Those statesmen as Metternich and Bismarck emphasized time and time again their friendship with the empire at the Bosporus. There is a famous quote attributed to Bismarck. "The love of Turks and Germans for each other is so old that it will never fail." Both countries were worried about that time about Russia's expansionism and took a primarily geostrategic view on the map on which even today Turkey is still a connection between Europe, Russia and Asia, and of course a bridge to the Middle East. This was one of the reasons why we as Social Democrats have always been critical of the blocking of accession negotiations at European Union level at a time when Turkey was still pursuing on a pro-European reform course. It was also a time when Erdogan was fighting human rights violations, strengthening democracy and the welfare state by introducing universal health insurance for children, for example, and abolishing the death penalty. It was also a time when Mrs. Merkel coined the phrase privileged partnership and made it clear to Turkey that Germany did not want to see it become a member of the European Union. Turkey, also as a mainly Muslim country, felt spurned and unwanted in Europe. The historian Herfried Münkler reaches this conclusion. "With Turkey in the EU, you could have solved today's problems. We should have made Turkey put its hope in the European Union. We have not done this, and now we have a problem." We do indeed have a problem here. Erdogan has changed his politics and the country. Turkey is steadily drifting away, as we heard this morning, from democracy and the rule of law. Human rights violations, authoritarianism, and restrictions on press freedom dominate the news from the Bosporus as, politically, it puts more and more distance between itself and Europe. Since the failed military coup, the downward trend in Turkish democracy has accelerated. Freedom House now ranks Turkey close to China and Russia with a score of 35 points. And Erdogan continues to preside over a state of emergency, ruling by decree, with parliament now largely powerless. More than 150 officials have been suspended, we heard the numbers before, or sacked by decree. Some news agencies, TV shows, newspapers are banned. Journalists and academics have lost their jobs, and some are in prison, and there are further restrictions on academic freedom. Even the AKP increasingly being brought to line with the will of the president. Leading figures such as Abdullah Gül or Ahmet Davutoğlu have more or less been stripped of their power, and the mayors of six major urban centers has been removed from office. In diplomatic circles, we like to talk about special relationship. In the case of Germany and Turkey, it would be more accurate to talk about an extraordinary relationship. No other country, certainly no other country in Europe, has this kind of relationship with Turkey that Germany enjoys. Not France, not Poland, not Spain. The German-Turkish relationship is older than our countries. Germany is home to more than 3 million people with Turkish roots who found work in Germany, grew up there, went to school there, have parents and grandparents there, and now having their own families. The fourth generation has been born. When two worlds come together and complement each other, we witness the wonderful synergy that such bond can create. We hear it in the songs of Fazıl Say. We read it in the novels of Orhan Pamuk. We see it when Mesut Özil plays at the national football team. And if I may, I would like to take you on a brief excursion into recent German-Turkish history, which is reflected with special intensity in my constituency. You see, Mesut Özil comes from my neighborhood, like many other German Turks who have made the Ruhr their home. And as you know, the Ruhr is one of Europe's largest regions, with some 5 million people living there today. With the start of industrialization, the region became Germany's coal mining center. You might even say it was the Rust Belt. After the Second World War, the German economy recovered very quickly, thanks in part to the Marshall Plan. More workers were urgently needed, so in 1961, Germany signed the agreement with Turkey on the recruitment of guest workers. And the Turkish Republic was struggling that time with high unemployment and benefited from the foreign currency sent home by the Turkish workers in Germany. Here in the heart of West Germany, Turkish workers in the steel mills and coal mines were among those powering Germany's economic rebirth. And when the German government stopped recruitment in November 1973, many Turkish workers decided to bring their families to join them in Germany. They came from diverse parts of the country with diverse outlooks on life, but particularly from the villages of Anatolia and the Black Sea region. From my early days in the German Bundestag, I remember a group of women tourists who visited me in Berlin. It included a dozen women from the local mosques in my constituency, whom I had already got to know during the election campaign. And their husbands, somewhat enviously, had stayed at home, but the imam had, in the end, given the adventure his blessing. They spoke, towards the end of the visit, two women came up to me, and they spoke very little German, so one of the other women within the group interpreted for them. They said to me, "Thank you for this invitation. We have two things that we would like to say to you. The first that we have is that we have never felt this accepted in German society as we did today. And secondly, when we get home, we will tell our daughters that from now on, Germany will be the only language spoken at home." I was very touched by that kind words, and I often think back about those wonderful women. But the anecdote also demonstrates the kind of challenges that we still face in some areas in relation to integration. These wonderful, warm-hearted women have lived in Germany for years, but they still mainly watch Turkish TV via satellite and are often poorly integrated into the labor market. Only around 25% of them are in paid employment. And Turkish diaspora policies add to these problems. Time and time again, the president's speeches aimed at German Turks, particularly his supporters, exhorting them not to forget that they are Turks and not to assimilate abroad. And ahead of the Bundestag elections, he even issued his own personal voting recommendation, telling Turks in Germany not to choose either of the two major parties. I don't want to gloss over the fact that Germany has made mistakes as well. When the first so-called guest workers arrived in the 60s to help build the German economic miracle with their manual labor, the rule stated that the head of the household has to speak German. And the heads of the households were, of course, the men. So they went to the language classes, and the women stayed at home and were expected to help the children with their homework. It was assumed that they would be going home to Turkey soon away. 30 years on, we are discussing why Turkish women, to put it rather bluntly, are not integrating, and their children often do so badly at school. That, ladies and gentlemen, angers me, I must say that. The fact is that the children and grandchildren of those first Turkish immigrants are still rarely among the winners in our society. However, and this is need to be said, we are now seeing some positive changes. Year on year, we are seeing an increase in the number of students from Turkish backgrounds taking university entrance qualifications in their final year at school or studying at a university. Some Turkish families read more stories or more fairy tales to their children than some German families do. And there are no more visible role models, whether they are in politics, on TV, or on the football pitch. We would be well advised not to repeat the mistakes and instead to support young people who are familiar with both cultures and speak both languages. They are the skilled workers of tomorrow, and Germany will come to rely on their expertise soon enough. The same applies to Turkey. Excuse me. It too will need a generation of young people who can take responsibility and know the way around the business and the wider world. And that's why academic exchange, for example, which connects civil societies, does not benefit one side alone. On the contrary, it's a collaborative investment in the future. Overall, however, the Turkish community in Germany is anything but homogeneous. Sunni Muslims, Kurds, Alevis, secular Turks, all of these diverse groups from Turkey exist in Germany too, along with the conflicts among them. And the tensions in Turkey, domestic politics, can be felt in Germany as well and make the situation here more difficult. In some families, brother speaks no longer to brother because one is pro-Erdogan and the other is anti. Some families have relatives who were arrested or suspended after the attempted coup. The increasingly authoritarian domestic policy curse pursued in Turkey is mirrored within German society, and partly for that reason attracts considerable attention and also criticism. At the same time, there is widespread solidarity among the German population for civil society movements in Turkey, as we saw during the Gezi Park protests back in 2013. However, the delays in investigating the NSU murders in Germany, which is still not finished, and the German Bundestag's resolution on Armenia have led to mistrust within the Turkish community. Years of growing tensions mean that some discussions are now almost impossible without unleashing strong emotional reactions. And there is also a sharp criticism of German policies from a variety of quarters. Criticism, of course, indeed, it's part of democracy. And in recent years, however, it has gone beyond acceptable boundaries. All my deputies in the friendship group are German Turks. And some of them has been threatened on a massive scale and are still under police protection. That's intolerable. This is not the way to treat each other in a free society. The vote in the referendum to transform Turkey into a presidential system was the subject of intense scrutiny in Germany. And the fact that almost half of the Turkish community opposed to this move also did not go unnoticed. German criticism and bans on scheduled appearances by Turkish ministers ahead of the vote led to the German government being compared to the Nazis. And I have to address my colleague Arne Leeds, sitting in the first row over here from the, you heard him on the last panel. Arne, I did not try to visit Incirlik, but indeed some other colleagues of the German Bundestag tried to, and as a consequence of the refusal to allow German MPs to visit Incirlik and Konya, the German Bundestag voted to relocate Tornado jets, flying surveillance and the Airbus tanker aircraft from Incirlik to Jordan. In late summer, NATO and Turkey agreed to resume visits at Konya. Nonetheless, this incident has escalated to the level of the security partnership with NATO. A major turning point, however, came with the arrests of German journalists and activists. Germans have been detained in Turkey for almost a year and are being used by the Turkish government as political hostages. The businessman Osman Kavala, a civil society supporter with close links to Germany, is the latest to be detained. Journalist Deniz Yücel has been held in solitary confinement until yesterday. There we got some news, without charge for 10 months on wholly spurious grounds relating to alleged support for terrorism. There are regular protests in Germany to demand freedom for the other prisoners as well. And Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel sent a clear message this summer when he issued new safety and travel warnings for Turkey, put a question mark over Hermes export guarantees, and proposed reducing pre-accession assistance from the EU and putting the customs union negotiations on ice. In the current budget plan, assistance to Turkey has been cut by 105 million euros compared with the Commission's first draft, and a further 70 million in commitments is blocked until there is evidence of clear progress on the rule of law, another clear message from the European Parliament to Turkey. 3 weeks ago, soon after the Bundestag elections, there was a tiny glimmer of hope when human rights activist Peter Steutner was released from detention. In light of this dramatic developments and the public expectation that these provocations will not be longer be accepted, there is now a broad political consensus in Germany that a new policy course towards Turkey is required. It is likely, therefore, that Germany's new government, whatever shape it may take, will face the task of clarifying precisely what this means. The position most recently discussed in Germany, namely to break off accession negotiation, does not currently have majority support among the European Union partners. And however, currently this is almost a chimera of international policy. Because, for in reality, closing doors is always a two-way process. The measures adopted by the German foreign minister shows that Berlin is willing to take decisive action, also to protect common interests. From a German and a European perspective, these common interests are, first and foremost, secure trade routes and investment locations, but also cooperation on migration policy. Turkey, on the other hand, will not find alternative trading partners in Russia or China for a variety of reasons. So economic relations, in particular, must be reviewed and shifted towards a policy of restrictions and incentives, notably in relation to the customs union. Germany must play a constructive but also a resolute role in this context. Consensus with European partners is essential here. This would not only increase leverage, the stronger focus on the European level could also help to mitigate the damaging bilateralization of tensions between Berlin and Ankara. NATO should also be demanding more reliability once more from Turkey, one of its most important members. From Germany, active support could be given for civil society to counter the increasingly hostile propaganda against Germany in Turkey, and at the same time to help those who are working for pluralism and democracy. So diplomacy and discussions must continue and should not be limited to the ruling party, but must involve opposition movements as well. And this is an area neglected almost by Chancellor Merkel. Ladies and gentlemen, in the end, Turkish society will decide which part the country takes. We shouldn't give up on them, but should strengthen them. Because presidents come and go, the Bosporus will stay. Thank you for your attention.
Referring for that very rich presentation. Please, I ask those who would like to, we have a few minutes for a few questions and answers with Ms. Monteferring. So please stand by the microphones that are in the aisles, and I will call on you, introduce yourself, and a quick question. Sir.
My name is Kani Zulam. I'm with the American Kurdish Information Network. Last summer, when Mosul fell, the Iraqi government discovered a disturbing fact.
I'm sorry, could you speak up a little bit?
Last summer, when Mosul fell, the Iraqi government discovered a disturbing fact. Many of the wives of the Islamic State fighters who surrendered were Turkish nationals. As someone who covers Turkey and the Middle East, what do you make of this disturbing fact when it crosses your desk? As a woman, why do you think so many Turkish women are falling in love with these cutthroats?
Ja, also ich würde das jetzt mal versuchen auf Deutsch zu beantworten. So I speak German and I got a translation for that difficult issues, but of okay, now it's written in English, so maybe I have to stay in German. Also zuerst ist natürlich ganz klar, dass der IS aktuell eine der größten Bedrohungen darstellt, immer noch, auch wenn er schon in weiten Teilen des Landes zurückgedrängt worden ist. Und das ist natürlich möglich geworden durch eine Allianz, die geschlossen worden ist, über die wir auch im Bundestag immer noch auch nächste Woche wieder sehr intensiv diskutieren. So wie es aussieht, werden wir den Einsatz gegen den IS auch fortsetzen. Es sind natürlich natürlich, bitte.
Well, the Islamic State is an issue that, of course, still represents a big threat to all of us, although it has lost a lot of its power by now. This has been possible to push back the Islamic State due to the alliance that has fought against it. And this is an issue that has been discussed in the Bundestag frequently. Next week, we are also going to discuss it again, whether the alliance will continue. And I think that we will have a positive decision.
Ja, wenn ich das noch anfügen darf, was wir in Deutschland sehr stark diskutieren, ist unser Interesse an der territorialen Integrität. Das ist übrigens auch ein Interesse der Türkei. Aber auch in einer Post-Governance von Syrien muss natürlich auch über ja, ein Land gesprochen werden mit verschiedenen unterschiedlichen Gruppen von Menschen, die dort leben und auch weiterhin zusammenleben sollen. Deswegen ist diese territoriale Integrität eines der Hauptanliegen auch deutscher Politik.
And one very important issue, of course, that's being discussed in Germany right now is the territorial integrity of the nations. This is of great interest to us in Germany, but it's also an issue of great interest to Turkey, of course. And when we are talking about a post-conflict Syria, want to have a country where different groups can live together, comprising different ethnic groups and different people, and therefore territorial integrity will be of great importance to all of us.
Wir haben ja gleich noch ein Panel, um das abzuschließen, wo es nochmal ganz speziell auch um die Außenpolitik geht. Und das werden Sie, glaube ich, verstehen. Die ganze Konfliktlage in Syrien ist so kompliziert, wie es kein Konflikt ist, den ich kenne, auch nicht aus der Geschichte. Und insofern ist es natürlich wichtig, dass wir möglichst alle Partner an einen Tisch bekommen, weil dieser Konflikt nicht militärisch gelöst werden kann, sondern nur politisch.
There is a panel discussion next, which is going to specifically deal with foreign policy. And as you surely know, Syria is an extremely complex situation. It's the most complicated and complex crisis that we have had. There is no other, even in history, that has been similarly complicated. And therefore, it's terribly important that we get all the partners, all those involved and interested stakeholders together in order to find a solution here, because this is a conflict that cannot be solved militarily, but needs a political solution.
Ganz zum Schluss will ich auch noch dazu sagen, dass Deutschland hier insbesondere Priorität natürlich setzt bei der humanitären Hilfe. Darauf haben wir uns konzentriert und auf die verbundenen Aktivitäten damit. Und das wollen wir auch weiter fortsetzen.
And a final comment, Germany has been emphasizing the humanitarian assistance. This is an area that we have stressed in the past, and this is an area where we are going to continue our aid.
Thank you.
My name is Mustafa Malik. I'm retired as a journalist. You mentioned that the Turkish Americans, Turkish Germans don't speak German, are not assimilating. Is it not unrealistic to expect in this country German Americans did not assimilate until the third generation? In the second generation also they spoke Germans. And also among here Irish Catholics, married Irish Catholics, Polish Catholics married Polish Catholics. So how do you expect, even by second generation, for Turks to assimilate? Secondly, hasn't European historic intolerance of other cultures been mainly responsible? First, Jews and Muslims were, on religious reasons, exterminated from Spain and other countries. Then when Europe secularized, they were expelled from racial ground, the Jews and Muslims, and I don't have to tell you, being a German. In this country, the problem doesn't arise, who speaks what, or in England. So historically, you have been a cultural monochrome, never tolerated another culture. Or is it not responsible also for problem of integration? Thanks.
Also zunächst mal haben wir ja in Deutschland bereits eine vierte Generation, die gerade geboren wird. Und als Vorsitzende der Parlamentariergruppe bin ich natürlich in Kontakt mit deren Eltern, Großeltern, und viele von denen wohnen eben auch in meinem Wahlkreis, sind meine Nachbarn, gehen in den gleichen Supermarkt einkaufen. Und ich habe als Politikerin gemerkt, dass wir trotzdem nach wie vor auch in Deutschland noch zu stark nebeneinander herleben. Und es ist auch ein Problem tatsächlich von Rassismus, Intoleranz, was es überall auf der Welt gibt und auch in Deutschland selbstverständlich nicht nur in diesen Fällen auch gegeben hat und gibt. Und deswegen ist es so wichtig, dass wir auch über die Geschichte, die Sie ja auch ansprechen, dass wir uns bewusst darüber werden, dass wir nicht bei Null anfangen, sondern dass meine Generation als eine junge Generation, die jetzt beginnt, Verantwortung zu übernehmen, auch in Deutschland, dass wir uns darüber klar werden, mit welcher Haltung wir einerseits in die Welt gehen, aber auch in die Nachbarschaft. Weil in der Nachbarschaft fängt Rassismus an und nicht erst in der Außenpolitik. Und deswegen ist es so wichtig, dass wir, deswegen sage ich auch, dass unser größtes Interesse ist das friedliche Zusammenleben mit allen Menschen in Deutschland. Ja, und Integration ist ein Zusammenkommen von Kulturen, eine Frage von Begegnung und Interaktion. Und das müssen wir möglich machen. Und wir tun es eben nicht. Und wir haben auch da Fehler gemacht, indem wir bestimmte Gruppen, insbesondere die Frauen, früher ausgeschlossen haben. Und wenn wir jetzt darüber sprechen, dass Flüchtlinge zum Beispiel zu uns kommen, Menschen fliehen, dürfen wir diese Fehler nicht noch einmal machen.
Well, in Germany, we already have the fourth generation being born right now. And as a parliamentarian and the chairman of the parliamentary group, I am in constant contact, of course, also with the older generations, with the parents and grandparents of these German-Turkish families, because I have many of them living in my constituency, and I meet them on a daily basis when I go to the supermarket, for example. And I can say that what I have found is that too often we still live side by side but don't have enough interaction with each other. But we have to be aware of it, that racism and intolerance, it does not only exist towards the outside externally, but also in our communities, and we have to guard against that. And therefore, it is very important that we, as the young generation that are now assuming our responsibility in our society, are aware of the fact that we are not starting from ground zero in establishing these positive relationships. We have to be sure that we practice our tolerance, not only towards the external forces, but also to our neighbors, because the most important thing is to live peacefully together with all the groups, both in Germany and on a global basis. Integration, after all, means that you have a melding, a coming together of different cultures, of meeting and having strong interactions. And what we have to avoid is that we do not make the mistakes that we made in the past. For example, that, for instance, women were not integrated quickly enough. We have to make sure that the new refugees that are now coming to Germany have an opportunity so that even women have a chance to integrate into society.
Thank you very much. That's all the time we have. I want to thank the Honorable Muntefering for your excellent comments.